tonight.
Yep.
We're live?
Yep.
As opposed to?
Not live.
Make sure everyone, we had three people that were in front, right? Make sure everyone's here before I shut the door. Can you hear us up in Schenectady?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Okay, New York State Racing Paramutual Wagering and Breeding Law, Section 102, provides that the New York State Gaming Commission shall consist of 7 members appointed by the governor, by and with the advice and the consent of the Senate. 4 members having been confirmed by the state Senate affords the commission the ability to establish a quorum and undertake action. This present meeting of the Gaming Commission is now called to order. Ms. Secretary, will you please call the roll?
Commissioner Crotty?
Here.
Commissioner Proklemba?
Here.
Commissioner Sample?
Here.
Commissioner Snyder?
Here.
Ms. Secretary, will you please have the record reflect that a quorum of qualified members are present, thus enabling transaction of business. By statute, a member shall be designated as chair of the commission by the governor to serve in such capacity at the pleasure of the governor or until his or her term as a commission member expires, whichever is first. No such designation has yet occurred. Thus, the commission is determined to select one member to act as a presiding officer for the purposes of this meeting. Gentlemen, would you like to select a presiding officer for the purposes of this meeting?
I nominate John Proklemba.
A second.
All in favor of Mr. Proklemba?
Aye.
At this point, I'll turn the podium over to you.
Thank you, Rob. Minutes of the commission meetings conducted on June 26, 2013 and July 11, 2013 have been provided to the members in advance. At this time, I'd like to ask the members if there are any edits, corrections, or amendments.
None.
In that case, I'll ask for a motion to approve the minutes.
I'd move the approval.
Motion by Commissioner Snyder. All in favor?
Aye.
The minutes of the June 26th and July 11th, 2013 minutes have been approved. Next up is the report of the Executive Director. Rob?
Well, this week there have been several transformative gaming events. First, on Tuesday, Governor Cuomo signed into law the Upstate New York Gaming Economic Development Act, which is a comprehensive new law that, pending approval of a referendum this fall, will establish 4 destination gaming resorts in upstate New York. Second, yesterday, the governor traveled to western New York to meet with Seneca Nation President Barry Snyder and start the process of implementation of the Memorandum of Understanding by and between the Seneca Nation of Indians and the state of New York that was signed this past June. Both have implications for the commission. I'd like to spend my time this morning addressing portions of both. I want to provide a little bit of an overview of the commission responsibilities under the new law and outline some of our responsibilities under the Seneca MOU. The enabling legislation itself is approximately 150 pages. I know I sent it around to every one of you, but it's much too expensive to get real deep into the weeds. So I just want to address a couple of few provisions that are likely interesting or curious to commission members. The most significant duty of the commission is going to be to establish a separate board, which is to be known as the New York Gaming Facility Location Board. This board will be charged with selecting, through a competitive process, not more than 4 gaming facility license applicants. Those selected applicants will be authorized to receive a gaming facility license if they are found suitable by the commission. The commission is required to select the 5 members, as I mentioned, and then also name the chair from those 5 members. There are some very significant limitations on the individual's ability to serve, as you had some as well that were requirements. Each member must be a New York State resident. No member of the legislature or any person holding elective office or appointed of office in the state, the federal or local governments are eligible to serve. Members must have 10 years experience in fiscal matters and have significant service as an accountant, an economist, financial analyst experienced in finance or economics, significant experience in an academic field relating to finance or economics, knowledge of the commercial real estate industry, or executive experience with fiduciary responsibilities in charge of a large organization or foundation. Additionally, the board members can't have any close familial or business relationships with any person that holds a commission license. They can't directly or indirectly have a financial interest, ownership, management in any gaming activities. They can't share in or receive directly or indirectly from the receipts or proceeds of any gaming activities in the state. And they can't have a beneficial interest in any contract for the sale or manufacture of gaming devices, the conduct of the gaming activity, or the provision of independent consulting services to any establishment that's to be licensed. So there's some very significant limitations on that. The Gaming Commission is required to assist the board. Our staff is going to be required to assist the board. But we're not limited to that. The board itself, the siting board, is required to contract with an outside consultant to provide analysis of the gaming industry and to support the board's comprehensive review and evaluation of the applications submitted to the board for licenses. The board also has an ability to independently contract with additional attorneys, accountants, auditors, financial and other experts that are necessary for them to undertake their duties. Under the new law, the Gaming Commission is the primary licensing and regulatory authority for gambling in New York. With respect to licensing, we're charged with all gaming facility, occupational, gaming vendor, and junket licensing. We're also charged with monitoring all the licensees and other persons having material involvement with a licensee for the purpose of ensuring that licensees are not issued to or held by unqualified or unsuitable persons. There is also a significant on-site expectation, as the commission is required to be present through agents at all times in a gaming facility for the purposes of certifying revenue, receiving complaints from the public related to the gaming or wagering operations, and conducting reviews of operations and facilities. Another somewhat unique element that's contained in this law is that the commission is also likewise responsible to grant any license or permit or related to alcoholic beverages within any premises or any part of the premise that might be licensed. So we also are going to have regulatory responsibilities over the alcohol service. But we won't be alone, at least on the alcohol. The law requires consultation with the state liquor authority before issuing any license or commencing any enforcement action. We're also required to adopt and follow the state liquor license rules, bulletins, regulations, etc. Another unique element of the new law is that we have some responsibilities regarding the casino referendum itself. Any entity licensed by us that spends more than $1,000 for advertising, supporting or opposing the referendum is required to file reports to both the Board of Elections and to the Gaming Commission. Violations for failing to provide this reporting carry with it a penalty of up to $100,000 or the cost of communication, whichever is greater, to be imposed by the Gaming Commission for each violation. We also have an obligation to post any reports that we receive onto a public access website. The last element of the casino gaming legislation that I want to address today regards video lottery gaming. As you're all aware, the Commission regulates the state's video lottery gaming facilities, which will all be expanded under the new law. The new law authorizes Nassau and Suffolk Off-Track Betting Corporations to establish one video lottery gaming facility each with a maximum of 1,000 machines. In the event the gaming referendum does not pass, the Commission is authorized to competitively site up to 4 video lottery gaming facilities, one in each of the 3 regions that's non-Indian, that's the Capital District, the Central Southern Tier region, and the Catskills, and Nassau County gets another facility in addition to the one that I just referenced. The siting of these will be based upon revenue generation and certain economic development criteria. With respect to the Memorandum of Understanding with the Seneca Nation, the state requires a few actions of the commission. First, the commission is required to take steps necessary within 10 days of memorandum execution, which, as I mentioned, was minimally finalized yesterday, to cause the cessation of operation, ultimate removal, and prohibit the reintroduction of stepper reel video lottery terminal devices. It's a very specific device that we've identified exactly what they are. There's a total, I think, of 246 that are in Western New York right now. And that those were all previously approved or authorized by the division of the lottery. We need to remove those and prohibit their reintroduction within the Seneca exclusivity zone. The commission already has plans in place with its vendors, and we've also spoken to our video lottery gaming agents. We'll disable the machines and remove them from the facilities in a timely manner. The vendors have been extraordinarily helpful, and we're in a position to substitute alternative games on the gaming floors of each of the affected facilities. Second, the commission is required, as soon as practicable, to commence a notice of proposed rulemaking to prohibit the use of the terms slots, slot machines, casino, or casinos for marketing or other purposes by video lottery gaming device facilities or licensed agents of the state lottery operating within that Seneca exclusivity zone. Accordingly, staff will be later today looking to present a notice of proposed rulemaking as new business. We were unable to formally add the item to the agenda as we publicly noticed the agenda prior to the enabling legislation being signed and then causing that memorandum of understanding to become effective. Any questions?
No. What's the timing?
On?
If the referendum passes.
If the referendum passes, the referendum will become effective on January 1st, 2014. The siting board is required to issue its RFP, its initial RFP, no further than 90 days following the passage or the effective date. So they will have some serious work to do.
So it'll be 5 months from the time. You'll know on election day what happens.
That is correct.
And then it'll be 5 months before they have to issue the RFP?
Correct.
Wow.
So we will really have some significant work ahead of us.
Do they line up the siting board now?
They being you?
They being us.
Oh, they being us, yeah. Well, yeah,
me
I guess.
Gay.
I'm still adjusting. Yeah. Do we start lining up the siting board sooner versus later?
I would assume you'll have to start having some discussions on how to properly recruit for that position.
Yeah, it's pretty specific.
Very specific criteria and very, very important elements. You know, a very important element in the casino referendum.
Thank you, Rob.
You really want to get nervous. It's 8 months away, right?
Yes.
For when the RFP goes out.
Yes.
Right. What happens, you know, what that RFP calls for in terms of timing for the
understood
incoming
the
proposal is a whole other.
Correct.
They just have to get the RFP out, not everything be in line.
Okay. Moving on to item number 5 on the agenda, final commission adjudication in the matter of James Monticello, a harness racing trainer from Saratoga Raceway. Ed, could you present that one?
Thank you, Mr. Proglemba. You do have before you for final agency adjudication the matter of James Monticello, who has appealed a track ruling from a presiding judge at the Saratoga Harness Raceway. The way the process works is when someone wants to challenge a track-level ruling, they ask for a hearing. A hearing officer is appointed who then takes testimony and assembles the record and is charged with writing a report setting forth the facts and conclusions that he's reached and his recommendations to you, the commissioners, on the result that should ensue. In this instance, the hearing officer recommended that the presiding judge's track ruling be affirmed, that two horses in question who each had a partial owner who was unlicensed at the time of certain racing, a total of 6 races, be disqualified, and that purses that aggregate the amount of $3,680 be returned for for redistribution to courses that are replaced as a result of the disqualification. If the commission wishes to discuss any issues in regard to this matter in depth, my recommendation would be to table it at this time and take it up at another forum. But if you're prepared, you know, having seen the record and materials and have the hearing officer report before you, if you're prepared to adopt or adopt with modifications, it's right for your action at this point.
Well, I received the report and the recommendations as well as a recording of the actual hearing, which I've had an opportunity to review, and I feel satisfied that I can move forward. The other commissioners are in agreement?
Yes.
Then I accept a motion to approve the recommendation of the hearing officer.
Motion to approve the hearing officer recommendation.
Motion second. By Commissioner Snyder, second by Commissioner Crotty. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Is that sufficient, Mr. Burns?
Yes. I think actually the minister reflects that you're adopting the hearing officer.
We are adopting the hearing officer. The next item, number six, rulemaking, New York State Racing Paramutual Wagering and Breeding Law, section 104.19, authorizes the commission to promulgate certain rules and regulations that it deems necessary to carry out its responsibility. And there are a few rulemaking items on the agenda for our consideration. Mr. Burns, would you like to explain them for us?
I will. There are several items for your consideration, and we'll take them one at a time. The first set of proposed rule amendments are in regard to equine drug regulation and reporting. These have been emergency rules in existence since December of 2012 that have been extended by the commission and are currently scheduled to expire on September 10th of this year. The former Legacy Racing and Wagering Board, though, simultaneously proposed them for permanent adoption with a notice of proposed rulemaking that was published in the State Register on February 20th of this year. So the comment period has passed, and it's now ripe for your consideration for permanent adoption. Each of these amendments stems from recommendations of the New York Task Force on Racehorse Health and Safety, and are designed to promote the health and safety of the horses participating and the jockeys. Input from the industry was received before the emergency rulemaking was put into effect in December. And in fact, the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association made a suggestion to modify the reporting requirement that was incorporated into the emergency rule. So as a result, no public comment was received during the official comment period of the notice of proposed rulemaking. There are three aspects to this set of rules that involve corticosteroids, clenbuterol, and reporting requirements. For corticosteroids, which are strong anti-inflammatory medications that can also promote healing in joints of horses, that have therapeutic uses, but at the same time, they also have the property of masking pain in the horse, which can lead to situations where it's more risky for a horse to run and possibly be injured or break down. There's also an overuse risk when they're used too often in the same joint. So the recommendation of the task force was to extend the periods in which the drugs would be prohibited from administration to a horse. There are two ways in which the corticosteroids can be administered. There's systemic administrations or intra-articular, which are directly into the joint administrations. And the recommendation is that the time periods move from 48 hours to 5 days for systemic injections, administrations, and from 5 days to 7 days for joint injections. The second set of amendment, topic of amendment in this set is for the drug clenbuterol, which is a potent bronchodilator. It's used to treat respiratory inflammation in horses or respiratory infections, but it also has an anabolic steroid type effect, and that has led some to believe that, and the task force to conclude that it can be overused in racehorses, in thoroughbred racehorses. So their recommendation of the task force was to increase the time in which a horse is prohibited from running after administration of the drug from 4 days to 14 days. The third aspect of this set of rules requires the reporting of corticosteroid joint injections, and this allows the pre-race medical examination by the veterinarians to be better informed, to be able to look for specific aspects of joint problems in horses and be able to clear them for a race with more full knowledge of the treatment that's been administered to that horse. And it's believed that that's an important factor in decreasing the amount of breakdowns that we're seeing in thoroughbred racing. So if there are any questions, I'd be happy to try to address them. Otherwise, it's ripe for your consideration for adoption as a permanent rule.
Any questions?
Didn't we at one point say we're going to at least get the list of where it was published beyond this? It was not just the state record, right?
Yeah, there was a memo, we can provide you with that, of Ms. Buckley has handed me a list of that, of the distribution lists of people to whom it gets sent after the notice.
So there was publication in the state register.
Correct.
And then there was a distribution to parties that the commission staff believed had interest in the new rulemaking.
Correct. And people such as the Jockey Club, right, or the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association.
Or individuals who have indicated an interest as well.
I'm all for approving it. I just don't feel better if going forward when we did this stuff, they asserted a position one way or the other. Right? Or at least ask them, solicit an opinion, you know, even if it's fine. At least to acknowledge that they've seen it and sort of have some level of understanding that's coming. If you're changing the rule, obviously you're changing a set practice that occurs. If everyone's okay with it, that'd be fine.
Just to be, John's raising an interesting point. The task force gave the recommendation. The wagering board implemented an emergency rule.
Yes.
Consistent with that, and it's been in place now for how long?
Since December of 2012.
So it's been the rule that they're functioning under since 2012.
Right.
We still haven't heard any negative comment.
Correct.
On the rule. Okay.
And I think that may partly be due to the fact that input was solicited between the October publishing of the task force and the December implementation of the rule, so that at a very early point, interested parties had an opportunity there to weigh in with any concerns they might have had.
And you indicated you had made some modifications as a result of that input.
That's right. The Horsemen's Association suggested, with respect to the reporting of the corticosteroid joint injections, that the trainer shouldn't be solely responsible for it, that the treating veterinarian could also make that report.
I'm fine with improving. Just if it's a set pattern they have, modifying that, no one has a complaint. You go to the question of why were you doing it the other way in the first place, right?
Well, I think Mr. Crotty is that no one had a complaint with the modification.
Okay.
Any other questions?
No.
Then in that case, I'll accept the motion to permanently adopt the temporary regulation regarding the implementation of substantive changes and procedures pertaining to equine drugs and reporting requirements for thoroughbreds.
I'll make the motion.
Motion by Commissioner Sider, second by Commissioner Sample. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The permanent rule is adopted. Ed, could you go on to item B?
Item B is another emergency rule that's currently in place that stems from recommendations of the Task Force on Racehorse Health and Safety concerning the ability of the new owner of a claimed horse in thoroughbred racing to void the claim if the horse is banned off the track, meaning transported off because of an injury. This rule's been in place since October of 2012, and as an emergency rule, is currently set to expire August 22nd of this year. Many races in New York are thoroughbred races, are claiming races, and effectively a claiming race means that by rule the horses entered into it are in effect offered for sale at a set price, but the winner or the claimant is not revealed until after the race is run. Last year in 2012, that rule was modified if the horse died or had to be euthanized on the track, that the claim would be voided in that respect. The task force thought we should go a step further and recommended that the voiding of a claim should not depend on the death of the horse. In fact, if the horse is injured and has to be transported off the track, the claim ought to be made voidable at that point at the election of the potential claimant. And the thought here is that having this rule in place removes an incentive for someone starting a horse in the race to race a horse of questionable health in hopes that it would get claimed by someone else and they could collect the claiming price. And that would thereby promote the safety of horses and the jockeys as well. There's also a technical amendment here that corrects a cross-reference that was inaccurate in respect to this rule. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to try to address them.
Thank you. Any questions? In that case, we'll entertain a motion to permanently adopt the regulation regarding the ability of a new owner of a claimed horse to void the claim.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Crotty, second by Commissioner Sample. All in favor?
Aye.
The rule listed in agenda item 6B is adopted. Ed, 6C, please.
6C, the next rule is a proposed rulemaking for...
Excuse me, before you do that, if the other commissioners are in agreement, I'd like to commend the task force for the excellent work that they did on this, preparing the report and working and looking at that, what I thought was a pretty difficult issue,
yes.
Sensitive issue. Let the minutes reflect that the commission commends the task force for the excellent work in providing us with their recommendations. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Mr. Pavlova. The next item is a proposed rulemaking in regard to the use of cellular telephones or other electronic communication devices in a harness racing paddock or receiving barn. Because of the rules of harness racing, horses have to be assembled in the paddock area for a long period of time before the race, an hour or more. And there was some thought from the standardbred owners group that this prevents trainers from conducting business they need to conduct because they're dealing with other horses other than the ones they have to be with in the paddock at the time. So a proposal was made in 2012 that the Racing and Wagering Board approved on a one-year trial basis to permit the use in harness racing paddocks of cellular telephones or electronic devices in designated areas so it can be looked at and monitored to see if that would work for the business needs of the trainers and the horsemen. The rule was in place for a year. It expired in February 15th of this year. There were no incidents or complaints reported in regard to the rule. The Racing and Wagering Board, before it went out of existence, proposed another one-year extension of that rule to allow, if the commission so desired, to continue that, continue it on a one-year experimental basis, or could start from scratch and propose it as a permanent rule. So what's been proposed in the notice of proposed rulemaking is another one-year extension. So it would reinstate the rule that was in place for 1 year until February 15th of this year and allow the use of these devices in harness paddocks in a designated area.
Do we know what they do in other states?
Let me see. Other jurisdictions do allow it. I'm not sure which ones, but they do. And the thought is that the having a specific rule might be better than the risk. risk of widespread noncompliance of people texting or trying to do things against a rule. I try to control it by putting in a designated area.
John, I'm sorry. Can you just articulate for me what the what's the negative that arises from the use of electronic communications in the paddock area that's trying to be controlled for?
It would be the passing along of information to wagerers outside that other people don't have access to.
And is there something about this rule? I mean, I recognize they've limited to a location, but is there something about this rule that actually addresses that concern? Or is it just that concern, the concern is waning in people's minds? I mean,
I think it's the latter, but the idea would be if it's in a designated place that's open, that officials of the commission at the track would be able to hear anything going on.
And this rule would permit texting.
It would permit texting, yes.
So who from the commission's in the paddock area?
There are paddock judges and other officials.
You have quite a number of individuals. There's definitely individuals from the commission in every paddock.
During the year where you had the experiment going, has there been any recognition of growth in, sort of exchange of illicit information?
No, not aware of any.
We're extending the experiment, right?
That's
what's on the agenda, to extend the experiment.
And this is for another year.
Correct.
1 year.
Yeah, I think we should just extend the experiment for a year. And I'm just speaking for myself. I would like a lot more information about this before I
try to make it permanent.
Thank you. Before I try to make it permanent. In that case, entertain a motion to extend the temporary rule for 1 year.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Snyder, second by Commissioner Sample. All in favor?
Aye.
Commission approved the 1 year extension. Moving on to item number 7. The New York Racing Association requested approval to offer 2 new wagers, a pick 5 and a show quinella. At present, the commission rules do not specifically authorize the wager. NYRA requested utilization of commission rule 4011.28, which provides that a racing association may, with the prior permission of the commission, offer any type of parimutuel wagering as defined in the December 1996 Association of Racing Commissioners International Model Rules. Ed, could you explain this proposal?
Sure. as Mr. Proklemba just outlined, we do have a current commission rule that allows someone to take the model rules in total if our rules don't specifically address the type of wager. The model rules of the ARCI include a provision called a pick-n wager. You can just fill in the number of how many race winners that need to be selected to it. And right now we have in our New York rules a pick 4 and a pick 6 wager that are specifically spelled out, but we don't have a pick 5. So the New York Racing Association would like to incorporate the ARCI rule as a pick 5 rule of their own. But there are some concerns about some areas that the ARCI rule does not address, in thoroughbred racing at least, for surface changes. If a race moves from a turf to a dirt surface, the ARCI rule is silent. So staff recommendation would be that if the commission were to approve a pick 5 wager to be implemented according to the ARCI rule, safeguards also be put in place to protect patrons and the wagering public in the event of surface changes. And that can be accomplished through the authority that the stewards have under our currently existing rules to fill in interstices and protect the wagering public. So the proposal would be that if the commission were inclined to authorize staff to accept this wager, if there's one surface change among the five races, that would be considered an all-win. So every wagerer, in effect, would get a win for that race, and the people sharing the winning pool would be those who selected four winners plus the all-win. But if two or more surface changes occur, and all wins had to be implemented for those surface change ones, the pool would only be shared among the net pool for that day, exclusive of any carryover from previous days, because the method that NYRA is wishes to implement has a carryover provision that if nobody wins the pool on a certain day, the pool carries over to a subsequent day. Very crucial piece of information that we need before the commission can approve this is the successful completion of the totalizator test, that no new wager can be implemented unless we're absolutely sure that it's being worked correctly according to the TOTE system. And the State Department of Tax and Finance is charged with auditing and monitoring that testing process. The testing currently is ongoing and not complete, so this type of wager cannot be authorized until we confirm at a staff level that that TOTE test has been successful and there are no issues with it. The second aspect is the show quinella wager, which is a type of exotic wager whereby the bettor in a single race picks two of the three top finishing horses without regard to the order of their finish. And there is an existing ARCI rule about a show quinella wager either, and NYRA has selected the method under the rules that they'd like to try this. It's not a very widely used wager in other jurisdictions, but it's something that NYRA has asserted to us they believe is worth worth a try and could be incremental in their revenue. For each of these wagers, NYRA proposes a takeout of 15%, which is within the statutory range for exotic wagers or multiple wagers that's set forth by statute. And we would also recommend that if the commission were inclined to approve these rules, that there be a requirement that NYRA have to make available the complete set of those rules as with all the conditions the commission might impose about the surface changes and whatnot. So the wagering public would have in one place a complete set of the rules that are governing that particular wager and alleviate any potential for disputes on that score. It's possible that, you know, depending on your preferences, you might want to consider whether to run this as an experiment for the remainder of the Saratoga meet and then for the Belmont meet in the fall, or for longer than that, depending on your preferences. We could also, in due course, consider a permanent rulemaking to put in our state rules a pick five wager or a show quinella wager that can be actually incorporated into our rules alongside the other types of wagers that that we have.
Any questions?
Yeah, I had expressed some thoughts on the topic. Thought one was that the pick five had a very good chance of cannibalizing the pick four and the pick six. And I'm not going to pick on you, but I wanted to, and I expressed those thoughts, the takeout rate also, then because it addressed specifically those other two bets, and probably more the pick six than the pick four, had the potential impact to cannibalize the pick six for a lower takeout bet, thereby deflating the pick six pool, which I think could have another issue as well, and not achieving a rate of revenue for the state that exists today. But because it's a new NYRA, they've thought about it, they've provided some projections that I think that really have to be defined and put in a way that's a little bit clearer than this in terms of creating a comparative to see if this is a, as a business move was successful. Did it produce more handle? Did it impact the state negatively? Both of which I think run hand in hand. You know, the gaming public hopefully will be receptive to this and will be wildly successful, and my reservations are completely unfounded. But I would rather see that proven out analytically over a period of time than guesstimating at it. Another concern, and the numbers you provided, albeit I know somewhat quickly, there was one state used as a comparison. It's my understanding that, you know, the Pick 5 is in multiple states and multiple jurisdictions. Looking at those as well would be useful. If it makes sound business decision, if it is a sound business decision, we should encourage it enthusiastically. I'm not completely sold that it is, but NYRA is, and therefore it's worth proceeding forward on an experimental basis. I would really move strongly to review this by the end of the Belmont meet and look at it from the comparative point of view of this is what we did last year, this is what we're doing now, and through the prism of the Pick 4 and the Pick 6. I don't know that the Pick 3s would necessarily be relevant to the Pick 5 player, but maybe, I mean, I would welcome NYRA's opinion on the topic if they thought that perhaps Pick 3 was relevant to compare it against as well.
You know, I, listening to the thoughts that have been expressed by John over the last period of time, I think that what we could do and what NYRA might wish to consider doing is set up an acceptable form of analysis now so that we see how they're going to track, how they've done it historically, and how we're going to compare the test performance with the new bet, the new wagers. And if that's set up in a way that's acceptable to us, then we at least know what we're going to see over what period of time. And then I would actually propose that we hear from NYRA whether they feel a short test through the Belmont meet is enough time. Do they feel that's an adequate test? Because what I wouldn't want to happen is have this test run, have them come back and say it wasn't an adequate test, we didn't get enough time, you know, whatever, it rained every Thursday, whatever, right? So
make sure they have enough data to properly
from their perspective. Yeah. I mean, it's their business judgment that we're testing. I just want them to set up the test in a way that they think will give them good data to manage their business.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if there's a reason why, you know, 90-plus days of probably of some of their more heavily trafficked, I mean, you would know better than I, but Saratoga's the biggest, Fall Belmont is the second biggest, or Spring Belmont?
Yes, we would probably likely launch in the fall with the new platform. So I would ask possibly to the end of the year to give me enough dates to make a statistically relevant sample in which I could show the migration of handle between pools.
You don't think it'll go in Saratoga?
Well, there's a lot of emphasis right now. We have an outgoing tote vendor and with some older equipment. There's a lot of resources being placed on just keeping the customer service level acceptable. So no, I do not believe they'll want to expend the resources to launch it during Saratoga. But from what I'm hearing from the commission, it sounds as if the takeout's the main concern, not...
No. It's the business.
I apologize if I can interrupt. Just for people that are listening on the telephone, would you identify yourself?
So David O'Rourke, New York Racing Association.
No, it's not the takeout. It's the business. It's the business. I believe that in the end, your business is predicated on the amount of handle you drive and how you get paid. You get paid, NYRA, off of your handle. I am not convinced that this new bet will achieve that goal for you. If you are, we're going to prove it. We are going to prove it, though, in a matrix of being able to analyze it and figure out if you were correct. And if you're not correct, why not? Maybe it's a case of more time. Maybe it's a case of when the bet hit. I don't know. I mean, open to all suggestions. You know, part of our role is to help promote racing. If you think that this helps, if NYRA collectively thinks that this is a good decision, should be allowed some latitude to try.
Right? As I understand it, and I may misunderstand it, but as I understand it, NYRA is saying, we think NYRA can do better by implementing a lower margin, what we expect will be a higher volume bet, right?
Correct.
That and so the only question is, if it's higher volume, where's the volume coming from? Is it cannibalizing pick six, pick four, or is it actually coming from new bettors? And are you doing better with a lower margin, higher volume bet or not? And I think all we're saying is make sure we have enough time to test it in a statistically relevant way and set up an analysis that we would all find compelling once we have the data.
Absolutely.
Well, close to compelling.
Oh, okay.
Maybe you need more time, right? I mean, yeah. I mean, to your point, maybe it is too short a sample. But because of that, I would feel pretty strongly about only approving it and extending it through the Belmont meet. If you can't do Saratoga for logistical reasons, I mean, we'll meet monthly, I guess, or perhaps more frequently. So our ability to extend it later based on your findings will not be an issue.
No. I mean, I hear your comment about, I would call it execution risk at Saratoga. You don't want to go there for whatever reason, your business judgment, and I certainly have no comment on that. But I would agree with John. Let's take it a piece at a time and see how it goes.
Yeah. And we'll work with NIRA to establish the parameters of what you think is appropriate for the review.
Yeah, and the lack of Saratoga, frankly, if you get the approval here, will be more about testing and other business issues not related to us, which is fine. It's just,
Okay, so we're going through Belmont.
The fall Belmont. Mm-hmm. When does it end?
Just before November.
So it's basically 2 months?
40 days. It would be a relevant period.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, with the understanding that if you decide you need a longer test, we'll discuss it.
Now, Ed, you said we need to hear from tax and finance before this can go forward. Is that both?
Mr. Proclima, this is Ed Burns to those on the phone. To frame how you would want to tee up, what your consideration of this, my suggestion would be for you to vote to authorize staff to approve for a limited period of time through the Belmont meet, for example, approval of this wager with appropriate conditions as discussed with surface changes and other aspects that we can circulate a draft approval letter to you after the meeting. But that letter would not be sent until staff was satisfied that tax and finance had performed the appropriate toe testing and would only be actually formally approved, not today at this meeting, but formally approved when that's accomplished and a letter is sent to that effect.
But it would be approved. You'd be delegating the authority for staff to execute, provided that those 5-plus criteria have been satisfied.
So it wouldn't come before us again?
Not for approval.
But it would come back to, sorry.
It would come back at the conclusion of the Belmont meet for either extension, making permanent
approval.
Or perhaps, who knows?
How long does the tax and finance process take?
It depends on how complex the results they're getting from the testing. But I think it's ongoing now, and my understanding is it could be, it's an any day now type of proposition.
Could be imminent.
Yeah.
We have a motion to authorize staff to proceed as Mr. Burns has suggested.
Yes.
Motion by Commissioner Snyder, second by Commissioner Crotty. All in favor?
Aye.
So when you think then the conditions, yet now have a conditional approval, the conditions to meet the approval week or so?
A lot of that depends upon tax and finance.
Right, but
it's not all.
If it's a day thing, you figure it's probably less than a week. So they'll have both board and agency resolution to move forward August, at the worst, August 10th.
We'll move it as soon as practical.
Right, okay.
And you'll copy the commission on all the correspondence?
Yes.
Thank you. Anything else? Moving on to item number 8, resolution in regard to the delegation of authority. At the meeting on June 26, 2013, we requested a modification of resolution 05-2013, which regards the delegation of authority in the commission. In the interim, each member has received a DVD containing all substantive actions taken by the acting executive director So we now have a general understanding of the day-to-day transaction under consideration. A revised resolution has been prepared and circulated for our consideration. Ed, could you explain the revision?
Yes. What's before you for your consideration is labeled as Resolution Number 5 for 2013. Covers some of the same ground as the previous Resolution Number 3, but is an attempt to address the concerns of the commissioners about the open-ended nature of the delegation of administrative matters as it was phrased in Resolution Number 3. So there are really two types of things we attempted to address in the draft of Resolution Number 5. One is a specific reservation by the commissioners of the ability to handle any matter that, because of its novelty or public importance or whatever reason the commissioners deem appropriate, to reserve decisions on an ongoing basis for themselves on a case-by-case basis as they may see fit, and directs the executive director to bring to the attention of the commissioners such matter that they might wish to exercise that authority. And then secondly, to more particularly enumerate the types of administrative matters that are being performed by the executive director and his designees as reflected in the appendix to Resolution Number 5. So it puts some more scope and enumeration to what was generally vaguely stated in Resolution Number 3, and talking about the types of matters that, for example, annual track license applications or modifications to track facilities and tote agreements between the racing associations and their tote providers, or lottery marketing and advertising schemes, et cetera. Those are just some examples, but we've attempted to list them out and then say in other similar matters to give the commissioners the type of depth that they were requesting when we considered the Resolution Number 3 in June.
Thanks.
Are we being asked to act on this delegation right now? Are we acting to approve this delegation?
That's how I understand the agenda now.
We had a lot of discussion about this last time. Do other people have thoughts about this? I'm thinking we may want to not act on this today and spend some time thinking about how it's set up.
It's fine with me.
Oh, right.
Is that all right?
Sure. Would you like a continuing amount? You know, what, Kristen?
Yes.
How many items did we do this past month?
56.
Would you like a continuing disk so you can get a better?
Yes, please.
Because I think that gives you a flavor of what crosses the desk on a day-to-day basis.
Let me tell you why I think we want to take another minute with it. There's a recital paragraph that talks about commission staff actions or omissions that create or alter policy. I was wanting to think about that a little bit. And there's a mechanic in one of the decretal paragraphs on the carryover page that sort of creates an obligation on the commissioners to notify the staff rather than the other way around. I want to think about that too. And if all of the commissioners end up being comfortable with this, I'm perfectly fine, but let's take another minute.
I agree. The part that I was a bit concerned about had to do with enforcement. I know that the commission is not able to approve enforcement actions that have to be taken immediately or in a very short period of time, but I'd like to know what those are. And any enforcement activity that we are inherently approving through a delegation, at some point, I would like to come before the board. That's just me speaking. So if there's authority that we need to delegate for a steward or some other enforcement officer that needs the ability to take immediate action, that's fine. However, if it's something that's deliberative or something that is not subject to due process, I'd like to have that explained a little bit along the lines of what you were saying.
I can give, again, this is Ed Burns again, Mr. Proclaimba. for example, on the lottery side of the commission's activities, we have almost 18,000 lottery sales agents throughout the state, and there are procedures in place that, in a weekly sweep of a bank account of money that the lottery agents would owe the states, if they ever come up short, there are processes in place and internal controls where they're immediately shut off to make sure that any potential ongoing loss to the state is mitigated. Then they're afforded an opportunity for a notice of hearing if they want to challenge that action. Sometimes it's a matter of just days. They catch up and put the money back, and everything's fine. But that occurs on a relatively routine basis, for example, and I wouldn't imagine that that's the type of matter that the commission would want to concern itself with.
I would say to you, Ed and Rob, I don't think there's any interest in you know, putting grit in the gears. Let us just spend a little time with this.
No, absolutely.
And as far as I'm concerned, the continuing authority that was delegated to make sure that we continue all of the operations of the commission.
Absolutely. Anything else?
No.
John? We can move on to number 9, new business, old business. Mr. Williams mentioned some new business for the commission to consider, specifically a notice of proposed rulemaking relative to the governor's memorandum of understanding with the Seneca Nation of Indians. Ed, could you explain the proposed rulemaking?
I would ask Mr. Williams, did you want to introduce any background to that first? Or
no, I think I did address it earlier today.
In your report.
Basically, this is consistent with what I had referenced before, one of the two items that the governor has included within the Memorandum of Understanding as an obligation of the Gaming Commission.
Right. Yes. So the Memorandum of Understanding between the Seneca Nation of Indians and the state now obligates the state to move forward with proposed rulemaking to implement one of the provisions of the memorandum. Specifically in the geographic zone of exclusivity that the Seneca Nation of Indians has been granted with respect to certain gaming activity in the western portion of the state from State Route 14 on west to the Canadian and Pennsylvania borders. The state and the nation have agreed that the video lottery gaming facilities operated by the state and agents of the state will, going forward, be prohibited from using the terms slots, slot machines, casino, or casinos in marketing, advertising, or other purposes. This can be accomplished through a modification and addition of a paragraph to a subdivision of Section 5116.6 of the Commission's rules in regard to video lottery gaming. That sets forth the geographic parameters of the exclusivity zone and implements that language. If the commission approves, you have been given today a very short memo that explains that, the text of the rules, as well as a copy of the proposed regulatory impact statement that would be filed with the Department of State. So if the commission acted today to get that process in motion, staff would file this with the Department of State as a notice of proposed rulemaking, and that would open up the normal rulemaking process comment period and allow the commission in due course at the expiration of those statutory periods to be taken up as a adoption of permanent rulemaking.
Thanks. Are there any questions?
I just have one. State Route 14. I know New York, upstate New York very well. Where is it?
Basically from Sodus Point. Actually, I think it's running from Sodus Point to the Pennsylvania border. So it's a little bit west of Rochester.
East of Rochester. It borders the western border of one of the larger Finger Lakes.
Okay.
I searched a map for an hour.
How far east of Rochester?
Rochester's about here.
Okay. Well, sounds good. Kudos to you guys for getting it done, right? That was long in the making, right?
Yes, sir.
Right. You were helping out, making this happen, so I think it's a great thing. Congratulations. Well done.
Thank you.
Yeah. So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The proposed rulemaking is approved. Next item is would be scheduling.
I'm sorry, sir. There's a piece of old business that is just for your informational purposes, I believe, which is the mission statement.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
The revisions.
At our meeting on June 26th, the draft mission statement was proposed for approval. Commissioner Snyder requested the statement be amended to include recognition of the commission's duty to regulate the safety and welfare of racehorses. Simply want to note for the record that the mission statement was so revised.
Thank you.
And now we can go on to scheduling in the next meeting. At this time, I'd like to defer the scheduling. There are a few ideas that we want to discuss regarding whether we should have a uniform date where we meet on a certain date every month, or whether we should just proceed as we have been. So we'll talk that, and we'll consider that at another time. Anything else? Anything else, any of the members?
And one of the things I thought you might want to talk a little bit about is what had happened out in Queens at Genting.
You're regarding the craps concern?
Craps, yeah.
I would prefer not to discuss that in this particular forum because it's an ongoing investigation that remains.
Okay.
But I would be happy to address that with you offline.
Okay.
Anything else anyone would like to raise? And that concludes today's published agenda. Since there's been no additional items, I'd accept the motion to adjourn.
Move that we adjourn.
Motion by Commissioner Sample. Second by Commissioner Crotty. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned. Thank you all very much.